All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, September 26th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UC Wyodat TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a sunny 71 degrees, soon to get up to 90 degrees again today. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Brain, Neurons, Facebook, Brain Computer Interface, Neuromorphic Silver, and AI. And last week we had looked at a lot of different technologies with being able to manipulate the brain with light and frequencies and things of that nature, being able to grow artificial neurons that can actually think and create brain-like computers utilizing silver, electricity, and magnetism. It was pretty disturbing. Well, to continue on the vein with technology, I want to say I apologize for not being live yesterday. We had a 2.5-hour Microsoft update that started yesterday morning about 5:30 or 6:30 in the morning and took my two main servers down. So by the time that they came back up, it was a whole morning of frustration. I wasn't ready to do a show. So I apologize for that, but I'm going to tell you I have my eye on a couple refurbished machines that I think I'm going to get from a technology company that I buy hard drives and stuff through. And I want to thank all of our listeners and a few of our hosts who have been quite generous over the last few months that we've had technical difficulties in helping me put some money away to be able to buy equipment. So I just want to tell you, thank you very much for that, because we are going to get two Dell machines that I have had before that I know are good machines, and we're going to get rid of this automatic update crap that just happens on a whim, even if you set it to not update, even if you set a schedule for when it is allowed to update, it still happens randomly without your knowledge. All right, so we're going to take a look at technology today. I ran across a couple stories yesterday about Jack Ma. Jack Ma is a billionaire out of China that is the equivalent of Jeff Bezos and Amazon here in the United States. Jack Ma runs Alibaba. We've talked about them before. Alibaba is an online retailer that sells all kinds of things. I remember one time I found a smart toilet on Alibaba. And all kinds of construction gear and whatever. It's a pretty interesting site. Jack Ma knows that artificial intelligence will change the world. Jack Ma says we need to stop training our kids for manufacturing jobs. And I've said this before. They even talk about Donald Trump saying he's bringing manufacturing back to the United States. And I said, but Trump doesn't quite get it, that it's not going to be the manufacturing that we had in the past. Of course, robots are going to come take our jobs. We're going to look at that as well. The Alibaba founder and chairman doesn't think we should be scared, but he does think that we should be prepared for major disruptions in the job market. In the last 200 years, manufacturing has brought jobs, but today, because of artificial intelligence, because of the robots, he says, manufacturing is no longer the main engine of creating jobs, Ma said on Wednesday in a speech at the Bloomberg Global Business Forum in New York City. Moving forward, Ma says that he believes that the service industry will be the largest engine of job creation. Ma's stance is starkly different from the economic vision espoused by Donald Trump, who campaigned on an America First populist agenda and has repeatedly made promises to restore U.S. manufacturing jobs. Talking about manufacturing, we should not be talking about made in China or made in America, Ma says. It's going to be made in internet. I actually like that. I think that's going to be in the title, Made in Internet. But Ma sees a major obstacle. He doesn't believe that the world's current approach to education properly prepares today's youths for the realities of tomorrow's work. And I do tell Munchkin that. I said, you know, you better be the best of the best, because you're not only going to be competing against kids from countries all over the world in this new globalist economy, something that we really didn't have to deal too much with until in my later years. I said, but you're also going to be competing against robots for jobs. So Better get cracking there, Johnny. But Ma says the way we teach is going to make our kids lose jobs in the next 30 years. And he noted that when it comes to tasks like calculations, machines will always do them better. The key to keeping human workers relevant will be emphasizing imagination. And we have to teach our kids to be very, very innovative, very creative, he says. And in this way, we can create jobs for our own kids. When it comes to AI, Ma positions himself a realist, but also as an optimist. Gotta love these AI optimists out there. The new technology will destroy a lot of jobs. Not like that's optimism. But, and this is how they always get you, it will create a lot of jobs as well. The question is whether we are ready and whether we are qualified for these new jobs. In the meantime, there shouldn't be widespread anxiety about war between humans and machines, says Ma. Computers will never have mastery over wisdom or love, giving humans a perpetual advantage, so he thinks. Well, I don't know about that. And I know Vladimir Putin has come up a few times warning about how the future is going to be in artificial intelligence. And Elon Musk came out and said that World War III is going to be fought with AI. Well, story out of the Daily Mail, Putin fears, and thank you, Lady Pitbull, for this one, that robots with artificial intelligence will one day, quote, eat us, unquote, and asks the head of Russia's largest tech firm, which is that Yandex we talked about, how soon it will happen. September 22nd, 2017, Vladimir Putin has expressed his fears over artificial intelligence by asking Russia's largest technology firm how long it will be until smart robots, quote unquote, eat us. This is awful. Go, Putin. The Russian president was speaking to Arkady Vozlov, chief of the internet firm Yandex, during a tour of the company's Moscow headquarters. And from what I've gathered about Yandex, they sound like a Russian Google. And then you have Baidu is the Chinese Google. Votov was discussing the potential of AI when Putin caused a surprise by asking when technology will quote-unquote eat us. According to the state-funded Russian broadcaster RT, the question baffled Votov. He replied, I hope never. And after a pause, he then explained that other machines are, quote, better than humans in certain areas, given the example of an excavator being better at digging than a person with a shovel. He added, but we don't get eaten by excavators. Good point there, Vatsov. But I hate to tell you, we did read, and I don't have the story up, but we did read about a robot called Eater before. There was some sort of military development that they had been working on in a laboratory that actually ate organic matter as a power source. So don't let this fool you. Putin, however, was unimpressed, and he interjected simply saying, they don't think. So at the beginning of this month, Putin said that the AI is the future not only for Russia but for all of humankind. He also said that alongside its colossal opportunities, quote, there are threats that are difficult to predict, unquote. He added, whoever becomes the leader in this sphere will become the ruler of the world. Yeah, as it eats all the humans. The president also promised to share any know-how that Russians acquire in the field to avoid conflict over this technology. But in expressing his concerns about the future of AI, he joins Tesla founder Elon Musk, who is strongly in favor of regulating its development. The South African-born billionaire worries that robots could one day take up arms against humans, a view recently challenged by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, who remains optimistic about the future and the bazillions of dollars he's going to be able to make with AI. What do you think of them apples? So Jack Ma, we were talking about him, Jack Ma, the equivalent of Jeff Bezos over in China, Ma's also a realist. He not only sees education, but also issues with environment, public health, and poverty as drivers that will influence how we handle the world that we shape with these new technologies. I'm optimistic and positive for the future of technology, he says, but we also have to be very, very careful. The first technology revolution caused World War I. The second technology revolution caused World War II. And now we are in the third technology revolution. The World War III should be against poverty, disease, and environmental pollutants, he says. So don't worry about it. Because analysts predict that artificial intelligence will be a $14 billion industry by 2023. We have companies such as Google and Amazon and Facebook all getting into the game, as well as the military. Here was one that I found this morning that made me chuckle. They are coming for our jobs. That's what caught my attention. But can the giant fighting robots save TV? Well, I don't know. Robots fighting for human entertainment may sound like something out of science fiction. And there is no shortage of movies such as The Transformers and Pacific Rim in which fighting robots are the focus. But robots could soon be moving from the big screen to the small screen, particularly in sports broadcasting. This is the logic behind Megabots, the ambitiously planned international sport featuring 10-ton, 5-meter armed robots piloted by an onboard human. And they look just like mech warriors. We knew this was coming, guys. It is both modern and as old as humanity itself. Gladiators slugging it out in ways that the Romans sitting on the Colosseum 2,000 years ago would recognize. And with a $550,000 raised via Kickstarter, Megabots Inc. from San Francisco are taking on Japan-based Shishibashi Heavy Industries with its extravagantly proportioned real-world mecha, as in M-E-C-H-A, large piloted anime robots. They envisage their battling robots becoming a major sporting franchise on the scale of Formula One racing, and the date for the battle is yet to be set. It may sound out there, but robo-sports could solve a big problem for TV broadcasters and advertisers, namely the loss of audience to streaming services, particularly the under 40 demographic. Robot combat games are not new. They had a mainstream exposure in the 1990s and the early 2000s with shows like BattleBots, Robot Wars, and Robotica. And all of these enjoyed a degree of popularity at the time, and despite being relegated from mainstream TV, they retain an international cult following. Those earlier versions featured modestly sized bots, which reflected a relatively low budget of these productions, but the modern reinvention has now some serious money being spent to create suitably spectacular robots, because they got to sell it to the population for international audiences. The potential for robots in the entertainment business can be seen in the emergence of high-stakes drone racing. And in March of 2016, Dubai hosted an international event with a $1 million prize pool. The Drone Racing League recently closed a $20 million deal with a consortia that includes Sky TV and Liberty Media, who owned the Formula One racing brand. In 2017, drone races will be broadcast on ESPN, Sky Sports, Disney XD, and several other networks. Interest in these events is rising rapidly, and last year, races were broadcast in 40 countries. This year, they're being broadcast in more than 75, and this suggests that there is room in the sporting world for robot technology of various kinds. Robot battles could help solve broadcast TV's seemingly existential crisis. People born since 1980s showed little interest in watching TV with a scheduled programming and sponsored ads. They prefer to get their entertainment from web streaming services and video on demand, or from gaming consoles such as PlayStation and Xbox. And adding to broadcast media's woes, people are making greater use of ad blockers, further reducing advertising revenue. Situation is unlikely to turn around on its own. So one answer is to leverage off people's inherent love of computer combat games. Under 40s might not be the greatest Super Bowl fans, but they've been playing fighting action games on computers for most of their lives, by design. And these games are popular because ritualized combat, whether on TV or on a console, is instinctively satisfying, particularly when enjoyed with friends. Well, on TV, those combative instincts have been channeled into a multi-million-dollar sporting franchise, such as wrestling, played in stadiums with thousands of fans, with millions more watching in lounge rooms and man caves around the world. And it is a small leap of imagination from human wrestlers to robots. Many under 40s are already familiar with battling bots thanks to American pop culture such as Transformers, and Japan has an even richer tradition of a robot culture going way back. The appeal of having gamer buddies from all around the developed world getting together on a Friday night to watch real battling robots could just be the draw card that broadcast TV needs to attract the under 40 viewer. You know, I was just thinking about this. Why not have people tune in from all over the world, and then you pay $29.95 for half hour of remote control of one of these robots in a coliseum? So you and your buddies could all have a tournament like an online video game. Critics will find reason to disparage robot sports, and it might be too lowbrow for their taste. Or maybe there is a more sinister agenda at work. Perhaps the military-industrial complex is sponsoring these sports, wink, to create the next generation of military-grade robots battle-tested and ready to rumble. It seems unlikely, though. DARPA, the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, runs its own well-resourced projects, and that is the DARPA Grand Robotic Challenge, and it has no need for a Kickstarter. No, it's taxpayer dollars. It is more likely that robot sports, and actually they're going through the academic complex of colleges as well, it is more likely that robot sports are simply a new form of entertainment aimed at generations who are comfortable with the ideas of robots, people who are currently do not watch much TV as the networks would like them to. And one should not take any of this too seriously or read too much into it, because human sport is hardly languishing in popularity. With 3.5 billion fans worldwide, soccer is more popular than ever, as is cricket, hockey, and tennis, but robots could add to the fun. We live in a world hungry for entertainment, a world where the immortal words of rampaging Roy Slaven and H.G. Nelson, too much sport is barely enough. Dun, dun, dun. So the robots are coming to sports. This one was also from Lady Pitbull. They are also going to take some white-collar jobs. We've talked about that before. Ross, the white-collar lawyer, and also some accountant jobs. We'll get this one in China. Chinese robot dentist is the first to fit implants into a patient's mouth without any human involvement. We've been covering a lot of these stories without any human intervention, all the stuff that's been going on. Successful procedure raises hopes that technology could avoid problems caused by puny human error and help overcome the shortage of qualified dentists. A robot dentist has carried out the very first successful autonomous implant surgery, soon to be brain implants. We read about that one as well. By fitting two new teeth into a woman's mouth, mainline China media has reported. Although there were human medical staff present during the operation, they did not play an active role when it was being carried out. The one-hour procedure took place in Jiangxi on Saturday, according to the Science and Technology Daily. The implants were fitted to within a margin of error of 0.2 to 0.3 millimeters, reaching the required standard for this kind of operation, says experts. The technology was designed to overcome mainland China's shortage of qualified dentists and frequent surgical errors, and it was developed jointly by who? Oh, the fourth military medical university is affiliated with Somatological Hospital based in Xi'an and the Robot Institute at Binghang University in Beijing over the past 4 years. So military involvement in robotics, it is across the board. According to Zhao Yimin, the mainland's leading oral rehabilitation specialist who works at the hospital, the robot combines dentists' expertise and the benefits of technology. It conducts the surgery by itself so it can avoid faults caused by puny human error. And the artificial teeth it implanted were created by 3D printing, he added. The epidemiological survey has found that there were about 400 million patients needing new teeth in China, but the number of qualified dentists was lacking behind the demand. About 1 million implants are carried out across the country each year, and the poor quality of surgery that the patients face can cause further problems. The report on the surgery pointed out that dental surgeons are working within a small space inside of the mouth, including some areas that are hard to see, which often makes surgery difficult to carry out. The use of robots could help get around that problem. And before Saturday's operation, the dental staff fitted position orientation equipment to the patient. They then programmed the robot to move into the correct position to carry out the operation and the determined movements, angle, and depth needed to fit the new teeth inside of the cavity in the patient's mouth. They then tested these movements and collected data to make the necessary adjustments before giving the woman a local anesthetic and carrying out the operation. During the operation, the robot was able to make adjustments in line with the patient's own movements. And in recent years, robots have increasingly been used to assist dentists with procedures such as root canal surgery and orthodontic operations, as well as training students. In March this year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the use of a robot system named Yomi, Y-O-M-I, to assist human surgeons when fitting implants. So we are going to have to look up Yomi, because that is the first that I have heard of that company, or the FDA approval of robots in surgery in the United States. So here's a new one. Speaking of robots, this is out of an engineering publication called Geneers Now. Scientists build DNA robots that could one day deliver medicine inside of your body. You gotta love the nanobots. Why create nanobots from scratch when our own DNA can take us several steps ahead? Yeah, if you can't beat them, join them. In the field of nanotechnology, and I'd be more worried about nanorobots eating us, Putin. In the field of nanotechnology, it has unlimited potential in terms of the practical use in the modern world. It is a relatively new one, but it has been slowly but surely catching on. And today is not an exception. Just recently, researchers from the California Institute of Technology might have potentially created a way to make DNA robots that can be used to bring medicine to a specific location in the body. DNA robots aren't exactly new. No, we've covered them before on the show. But they've been shown to be able to perform simple tasks, and it makes sense. And instead of trying to make a bunch of nanobots from scratch, why not just program DNA and skip the first 10 steps? This time around, a Caltech research team headed by Anupama Thingabare and Lula Kwan have taken it a step further. The study they had conducted involves creating DNA robots that were programmed to carry out a preset task. That task is basically having robots, quote unquote, walk on a test platform, locate a molecule, and then take that molecule with them and deliver it to another specific location. The robots had to do all these things independently. That's frightening. They could locate molecules inside of you and carry them around. The DNA robots were made from a single strand of DNA with only 53 nucleotides. They had, quote, arms and legs, and they were attached to these strands, allowing mobility and cargo pickup. The molecules used as cargo were also single-stranded DNA, except shorter and more distinct. And fluorescent dyes were then used to determine whether or not the robots were successfully able to pick up and deliver the right molecules to the right location. Are you listening to this? They could actually use these little DNA nanobots to genetically modify things by picking up other pieces of DNA and taking them other places. We design specific drop-off locations for each type of cargo, and if the type matches the drop-off location, we'll signal the robot to release the cargo. Otherwise, the robot will continue to walk around and search for another drop-off location inside of you. You might think that the robot is not smart, but here is a key principle for building molecular machines, and that is what the father of nanotechnology, and I can't remember his name right now, out of MIT, it talked about the molecular machines. You may think that robot is not smart, but the key principle to building molecular machines, making individual molecules as simple as possible so they can function reliably in a complex biomedical environment, but also take advantage of a collective of what molecules can do, and that is where the smarts are distributed, are into the different molecules. This is the first time that DNA robots were programmed to perform a cargo sorting task. But more important than the task itself, we showed how the seemingly complex task and potentially many other tasks that DNA robots can be programmed to do uses very simple and modular building blocks. Now, I don't know if I still have that story open. I think I closed it. But it was talking about these new Lego blocks of cells. Hold on. Let me get back to my feed and I can find that one, because this was very kind of disturbing to me. We had talked about nanobots quite often on this show, and DNA nanobots have come up in conversation. But the fact that these have little quote-unquote arms and legs, and they can be programmed to identify molecular cargo and even strands of DNA, pick them up, carry them around, and deliver them to different locations should be very concerning to every single one of us. So here we go. Cellular cargo is a part of regenerative medicine. Let's get this in order here. This is out of Medical Physics Web. Could cellular Lego be the future of regenerative medicine? Well, French researchers have aggregated stem cells containing magnetic nanoparticles to engineer a tissue that's deformable at will using magnets. This approach does not require any external supporting matrix for the tissue and could be the building brick of regenerative medicine of tomorrow. Stem cells are the cornerstone of regenerative medicine due to their unique ability to evolve multiple times into specific cell types. We've talked about stem cells before. They really are a promising technology, a process that is called cellular differentiation. We know that mechanical factors such as stretching the cells can greatly influence stem cell differentiation, is highlighted by many studies in both 2D and 3D cell cultures. But when studying the behavior of stem cells in volumes, the most common technique uses scaffolding. We've talked about those before. They use a sugar substance to make a scaffold of a liver or a kidney, and then they get the little stem cells. They make them out of your skin, called iPS stem cells, and then they get them growing, turn them into a liver or a kidney, and get them growing on these scaffolds so they end up being the correct shape for your body to be used for replacement. When studying the behavior of stem cells in volumes, the most common technique uses scaffolds to control the spatial distribution of the cells, but the stretching motion is limited by these scaffolds, potentially hindering the differentiation process. The research team, led by senior author Claire Wilhelm, bypasses the need for scaffolding by injecting magnetic nanoparticles into the stem cells and then using magnets to aggregate the cells like Lego bricks to form a tissue. So they inject them with magnetic nanoparticles and then they can bend them to the shape that they need. The second magnet then stretched and compressed the tissue at will to drive the stem cell differentiation. So they can actually make these cells turn into the types of cells that they want, by magnetically manipulating the stem cells as they are growing. This is just fucking lunatic. Securing these results was not a foregone conclusion. Wilhelm and her team had to ensure that many conditions were met. They first had to show that incorporating the nanoparticles had no impact on the functioning of a stem cell or its ability to differentiate, and that the cells would remain magnetic long enough to force the cellular differentiation. Guys, they are conquering life at a cellular level. And I think if there's anything that this show tries to illustrate, besides that I can make your brain hurt before first thing in the morning, is that they are taking control of all of life and all of existence, and they are putting this technological grid over the top of us to manipulate and control everything. That's the fear of what this technology that we all have come to depend upon. And we talked about the other day at the end of the show about how Ted Kaczynski was right, that not only are we being enslaved by technology, but as technology becomes more prevalent and society adopts it, you will not be able to opt out anymore. It will be forced upon you from every facet of life. And if you want to exist in this plane, you are going to have to consent. That's what disturbs me, is being forced to consent to this stuff. So this will be our new regenerative medicine, with things that they not only develop, but then they control. So we'll be able to put your new organ in there, Johnny. But we will also have the ability to switch that organ off someday, or to be able to turn on the little army of nanobots that now exist inside of you to do whatever our bidding is. I mean, it's just really horrifying. When you have children, you think about future generations. This is the type of stuff that they're going to have to deal with. These are the types of questions, ethical and moral questions, whether or not they want to participate in this forced integration into the Matrix. Securing these results was not a foregone conclusion. Wilhelm and her team had to ensure that the conditions were met, that they had to show that incorporating these nanoparticles had no impact on the functioning of the stem cells or its ability to differentiate, and that the cells would remain magnetic long enough to force the differentiation. When the viability of the created tissue was established, the researchers magnetically stretched the tissue and observed whether the mechanical stimulation impacted the cell differentiation. By imposing a quote-unquote magnetic beating that initiated the contraction of the heart, they observed that the magnetic stem cells were differentiated toward cardiac cell precursors, providing further evidence of the potential for purely mechanical forces to induce cell differentiation. So they created cardiac cells by making a magnetic heart beating that then they, through magnetic nanoparticles imitated inside of the cell, they were able to coax those cells to become cardiac cells. Resorting to magnetic nanoparticles in regenerative medicine is not a novel idea, as various strategies have been used as such particles for non-invasive in vivo tracking of stem cells or for targeting. This is, however, the very first time that researchers have used their magnetic properties to drive stem cell differentiation, outperforming the gold standard technique, which is the hanging drop method, in terms of the success rate of formation and control of the tissue created while requiring less manipulation steps. Building and manipulating the tissue with magnets constitutes an all-in-one approach that avoids the usual caveats of traditional techniques. These promising results must now be repeated for differentiated cells other than cardiac cell precursors. But this method is a step forward toward easier and more customizable tissue engineering in regenerative medicine. How long is it going to be before they start creating these tissue-engineered organs to be able to then try to create an artificial creation. A skin job, as they would call it on Battlestar Galactica. I actually saw an episode of the more recent Battlestar Galactica that dealt with the Cylons and Starbuck having to hack a Cylon spaceship, because the Cylon spaceships were hybrid. They were living organisms that were built into the ship itself. It was quite interesting. I paid a lot of attention to that, because how long do you think it's going to be before they start building these biotechnology hybrids? There is already a BTO division within DARPA, the Biological Technology Office. And you know that they are spending a lot of time and effort in developing technologies that are going to merge man with machine. So here's another one I came across. Sorry about this, that we're looking at medical technology today, because I know this is a lot for people to absorb in the morning. But these all kind of had connecting dots. Tiny nanoparticles, we haven't talked about nano in a while, could help repair damaged brain and nerve cells. Oh, so great getting into our brain again. When our brain develops problems that they will be able to detect in the future, such as, of course, degenerative diseases or epilepsy, some of the trouble can be electrical. And as nerve signals involve electrically charged particles moving around, medics often try to treat associated problems using implanted electrodes. And we looked at a lot of the problems of implanting all these brain-computer interfaces. You can get infection or swelling or scar tissue. But this is a clumsy and difficult approach, they say. A much better idea could be to implant tiny structures deep into the brain to act almost like miniature electricians. This may sound like science fiction, but it is moving fast towards reality. Attilio Marino and colleagues at the Smart Bio Interface Group at the Italian Institute of Technology in Pontedera are striving to bring the idea to the clinic. And they summarize progress in the field in a news and opinions article in the publication Nano Today. Nanomaterials are showing great potential, it says, in biomedicine, since they can interact precisely with living systems down to the level of cells, subcellular structures, and even down to individual molecules, says Marino. Marino is most interested in piezoelectrical materials. We've talked about those before, which can convert mechanical stimulation into electrical energy or vice versa. And we've found that they can even use ambient radio waves to power a piezoelectrical device. He's exploring using ultrasounding to mechanically stimulate nanoparticles into creating electrical signals that may fix many problems with brain cells. He points out that ultrasound offers a way to get a deep signal into the brain tissue without ever having to use invasive electrodes, which can cause other problems, including inflammation. Some researchers try to get around these difficulties using stimulation with light. Ding, ding. We talked about optogenetics, and that was all last week. Look at some of those shows. But light cannot penetrate very deeply, so ultrasound is a better option. The field is still in its early days, and researchers are mainly studying the fields of piezoelectric nanoparticles on cultured cells rather than in animals or people just yet. But the results are promising. Marino's team, for example, shows that using ultrasound to stimulate nanoparticles embedded in nerve cells can increase the sprouting of new cell signaling appendages called axons. And this is exactly the kind of effect that one day may repair degenerative brain diseases. We use a barium tintinate nanoparticle and confirm that the effect was specifically due to the piezoelectricity of our materials, says Marino. Other researchers are working with stem cells that can develop into a wide range of mature cells in the body, and some are finding that piezoelectric nanomaterials can stimulate stem cells to begin their transformation into a variety of functioning cell types. So very much like what we just talked about, using magnetism to create differentiated stem cells. Now they're talking about using a barium tintate nanoparticle and ultrasound as the piezoelectric force that then can transform stem cells. A long road of safety studies, animal tests, and eventual clinical trials lies ahead. But Marino is optimistic as he concludes the preliminary success strongly encouraged our researchers that this is a realistic approach for use in clinical practice in the near future. One of the other things that we discovered in some of our research on the show was that ultrasound is also very good at opening up the blood-brain barrier. So how interesting is that? Maybe they use the ultrasound to get the nanoparticles across the blood-brain barrier and then to differentiate. So I found a story from September 25th yesterday that talks about some of the stuff that DARPA is working on utilizing nanotechnology, how nanotechnology is pushing sensor innovation. And sensors are what it is all about, to be able to detect and sense our environment and put it in a dashboard from every perspective. Sensors are bigger and smaller than ever, and the popularity of sensors has grown exponentially with the increase in demand for smart products and can be found in most electronic devices, cars, phones, etc. And with the mass production of sensors comes the budget and the ability to develop them further, allowing for a much wider variety of applications, i.e. getting into every facet of your life to make you part of the Internet of Things. Most recently, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, most affectionately known as DARPA, and the researchers at Northeastern University in Boston announced that they had developed an infrared sensor that runs on essentially zero power. Now, this is like the second or third device that we have run across just recently that runs on almost no power at all, or is able to reflect ambient signals or utilize mechanical movements in its environment to be able to create power out of nothing. This incredible feat of nanotechnology innovation has the potential for much grander impacts than anything that has ever been seen before. Now, you gotta be scared when you hear something like that, because that is the promise of smart dust. Infrared sensors are electrical devices used to collect and record data from its surrounding area. They do this by either emitting or detecting infrared radiation, which is put out by all living things, and heat, which can then be used to detect movement, proximity, space, and heat. And the evolution of the smartphone and its use of various sensors has opened up the market for sensors and Dr. Smartphone, making it a very lucrative business to get involved with. The wide range of uses and demand has meant that the IR sensor has become readily available and affordable. Remember, that price point is what pushes technology into the mainstream. And these components highlight the different infrared sensors available online. And while these kinds of sensors are perfect for everyday electrical uses, researchers have started to look for ways to have a much bigger impact. And with the mass production driving down the cost of infrared sensors, tests and experiments are cheaper to carry out, which has sped up the rate of development in the last few years. Runaway! Researchers from Northeastern University have developed a zero-power infrared sensor for the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. Oh, goody. Beforehand, the dormant infrared sensor would have to be connected to a power supply to detect any infrared wavelengths, but now the smart sensor will be able to identify infrared wavelengths while in sleep mode by harnessing power from the very same wavelength it is designed to detect. DARPA wanted to employ a large network of these sensors in remote locations, but with sensors that require maintenance and constant power, the task was too costly and the results unreliable. But Northeastern may now have found a solution in creating sensors that require no power at all and, in turn, little maintenance. Northeastern reports that when the sensor recognizes a specific infrared wavelength signature, it uses the tiny amount of power contained in the infrared radiation to wake itself up. The sensors have mechanical switches that can be triggered by the wavelengths of light. And once triggered, so here we go again, utilizing wavelengths of light, guys. I think this is really the key to a lot of what is happening. The sensor harnesses the energy from the wavelengths to close a pair of electrical contacts, which then in turn creates an electrical connection between a battery and a load. Northeastern's design of sensor nanostructures allows the device to absorb most of the energy in a wavelength and then reflect other wavelengths simultaneously. Using the energy from the wavelengths in this way means that the sensors can remain dormant for years, ding, until needing to detect an object. DARPA has claimed that this innovation could be used across a whole new range of applications, including detecting human bodies, ding ding, or fuel-burning cars, identifying wildfires before they become uncontrollable, or pairing with laser sources, ding ding ding, for new types of remote control and communication applications. This will make war zones and other high-risk situations much safer, of course. Often in these types of environments, changing the battery of a sensor is an unnecessary worry, and using these new smart sensors will not pull the focus from the task at hand. As well as in warfare, DARPA has big plans for how these nanosensors could revolutionize the world. Oh, get excited. The design of the sensor can be altered to recognize various other signals. DARPA suggests that by changing the design, infrared sensors could be used to detect chemicals, specific wireless radio frequencies, and magnetic fields. And if these sensors were to be implemented across cities, the data collection could highlight what changes need to be made to create a city better for the environment. Associate Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Northeastern explains his vision. Quote, if we have all these sensors embedded in the infrastructure of a city, these would be smart cities, that would increase our awareness, making everyday life safer and more efficient for everyone. Well, if this vision comes to fruition, the more accurate and the more real-time results of the information gathered from these sensors and these cities of the Internet of Things could start to detect things such as environmental stressors, security threats, traffic pollution, and so much, much more, like 24/7 surveillance everywhere all the time. It is exciting to see the smallest nanotechnologies starting to have a big impact on the way we live our lives. So talking about nanotechnology in the fourth industrial revolution, the fourth industrial revolution is a golden opportunity not only for all the big boys, but also big boys such as Samsung. Backed by its brisk chip and smartphone sales, South Korean tech giant bets its future on artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and self-driving cars. Businesses around the world are facing a paradigm shift in electronic devices and information technology, and Samsung Electronics, whose operating profit is forecasted to reach a record $15 trillion, that would be $13.6 billion in U.S. dollars in the fourth quarter of 2017, has built its strategy around the Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, and automotive components, as well as industrial automation robots, to maintain its growth and its leading position in technology. By category, the microchip industry is expected to see growing demand for high-capacity, high-functioning memory chips for big data processing, as well as chipsets for automotive components and devices operated by artificial intelligence. The market will also see increasing use of flexible display panels, powered by organic light-emitting diodes. Ding, ding, ding. Organic LEDs. I wonder how they make those. So they can give you flashes of light utilizing optogenetics that can then change neuronal cells and chemicals being produced, particularly on smartphones, while home appliances, and there are a lot of Samsung home appliances as well, are connected to each other through Internet of Things applications. This technology transformation is a new business opportunity for Samsung Electronics. Now remember, South Korea is a big military partner of the United States. We have lots of military bases there, and we help them fund their technological innovations. Samsung also at one point was involved with DARPA and Regina Duggan. We read they were using some of their devices in the battlefield. And the company has been making efforts to develop innovative solutions and seeking to secure new businesses with high potential. Samsung predicts that the AI technology in the future will evolve, taking its communication processes a lot like how humans interact. To make AI technology more interactive to humans, Samsung believes it is important to deliver AI-based open ecosystems across all of its devices. And to realize this goal, the tech giant acquired Viv Labs, which is an intelligent interface to everything. Viv is a developer of an open AI platform that gives third-party developers the power to use and build conversational assistants and integrate a natural language-based interface into application services. By applying Samsung's voice recognition technology to Viv's open AI platform, the company expects to offer new service experiences for its customer, including one that simplifies user interfaces and understands the context of the user and offers the user more appropriate and convenient suggestions. Now, one of the things I want to point out here, and we've covered this before, Samsung has a massive military technology division. The department that you did not know, the military department that you did not know that Samsung had. Apple's biggest smartphone competitor also makes tanks, self-propelled howitzers, and jet engines billed as promoting peace and stability. Samsung Techwin is the South Korean manufacturer's defense branch. It makes surveillance, aeronautics, automation, and weapons technology. And since its launch into the defense industry in 1983, Samsung Techwin has developed and produced artillery systems like the 155mm self-propelled howitzer, the K9 Thunder, the K10 ammunition supply resupply vehicle, and fires direction-centered vehicles, amphibious assault vehicles, and other weapons, according to Samsung. Samsung Techwin's flagship K9 is currently used by Poland, Turkey, and South Korea. And down below, there is a video. If you want to watch it, I'll make a link to watch its impressive agility. The K9 becomes even more impressive when combined with the K10 ammunition resupply vehicle. And the K10 pulls up behind the K9 and automatically feeds more ammunition to the K9, eliminating the need of a resupply vehicle at hand, which minimizes the risk of troop exposure. Together, they create an automated weapon system for the field. Ding, ding, ding. Remember, we read about Kalashnikov as well, getting into the AI machine gun. We have to worry about some of this stuff, guys. Samsung Techwin is just one subsidiary of the 80 different business units Samsung is involved in. So let that be a lesson to you. For those of you who use Samsung products, they are now giving all kinds of intelligence to these devices. With Samsung Smart TV, remember they had two-way cameras on those. Users can control menus and turn related devices on and off. Samsung's FlexWash is designed to operate with smartphones from starting and stopping the laundry, as well as to monitoring the entire process. Now, I want to talk about digital assistants. I was in a home improvement store the other day, and I had to laugh when I saw that Google and Amazon had smart remote control home devices in my local home improvement store. Well, then I ran across a couple of these stories. Amazon is now working on Alexa-powered smart glasses plus a home security system. So Amazon's got smart glasses. I'd be careful with that. Remember, Amazon's Jeff Bezos was working with the CIA as part of creating them an Amazon cloud. And remember, the CIA was working with IARPA and Georgie Porgy Church to map neurons. Don't ever let any of this technology get near your eye. Alexa-powered glasses. Yes, Alexa-powered glasses. The Financial Times is reporting that Amazon is currently working on two new products powered by Alexa, which would be the company's virtual assistant. Citing people familiar with the Seattle-based company's plans, the Financial Times writes that the first product will be a pair of smart glasses that provides wearers access to Alexa from anywhere in the world to ensure it can be worn comfortably and to avoid drawing attention in public. The device actually resembles a typical pair of glasses, and they would also feature a bone. I thought this was really insane. A bone conduction audio system allowing the wearer to hear Alexa without ever inserting a pair of headphones. So this uses the user's bones to conduct audio. I wonder how that is going to affect your bone stem cells, since we found out that they can use sound, ultrasound, or magnetic frequencies to manipulate stem cells. Using your bones to send audio. The second product will also be a part of Amazon's lineup of smart home accessories, specifically a home security camera system. The camera would have internet capabilities and would support various Amazon Echo products. And among other things, users would be able to view a camera's video feed live in your house online on the Amazon Echo show screen and track the progress of your Amazon order. Oh, where's that book I ordered? Oh, what is going on in my kitchen? Oh, look, I can hear the noise through my bones. CNET writes that Alexa and Amazon's Echoes have performed well since their respective launches, presumably a significant reason behind Amazon's decision to expand into smart glasses and security.